Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back into Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, along with Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I got it right.
Yeah.
I'm Mark Rohde. We are here with you until 5 o'clock today. We are open for business, 312-644-6767, and textable at 670-11. A very busy day on the show because it's been a busy day in sports with the breaking news today that the Bulls have signed Jabari Parker to a two-year, $40 million deal. The Cubs, who got a win last night, right now for the mathematical moment, are tied for first place with the Milwaukee Brewers in the National League Central. Cubs are at San Diego tonight at 9:15, 8:40 pregame with Zach Zabeman. White Sox and Royals going on now out at U.S. Cellular Field, or actually Guaranteed Rate Field. Danny Duffy against Reynaldo Lopez in that one. And Eric Edholm, it is a pleasure to have you with us here.
Yeah,
today.
Pleasure to be here. I'm excited. I always enjoy mixing things up a little, talking some Bulls, talking some baseball. And, you know, I'm not as steeped in the Chicago scene as you are, but I will do my best to hold serve.
I know you will. And here's what we got coming up on the show today. We're going to get into some NFL talk here in just a second with the Bears reporting on Thursday to Bourbonnais and the rest of the NFL world about to go hard on everybody. But here's what we have coming up at 2:20. We will have Ben Albright of the 104.7 FM in Denver to talk about the NFL. Bruce Levine will be on at 3 o'clock as he will talk about the Cubs and the White Sox. And then we will get deeper into what is going on with the Chicago Bulls and Jabari Parker with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. So that's coming up in a little bit. And again, we're here until 5 o'clock, and hopefully you're here as well. 312-644-6767 is a number. I already see people lining up. All those things that I've thrown out there, we will allow for anything, any of these topics that you'd like to discuss, especially with the Jabari Parker signing, which we will definitely get into and dig into a little bit. So if you still have things you want to get off your mind as it pertains to that, please feel free to jump in on that. My thing is on this, just to make it a little bit softer for people who don't like it, who, as I heard the word hate being used, this is a flyer on a guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a two-year, $40 million deal. It's actually, to make it even easier, Eric, it's a one-year deal.
Yep.
With an option for a second year. So that is it. For that kind of money, for that kind of years, this is a prove-it deal.
Yeah.
For Jabari Parker.
And forget the money for a moment. The two most important words are team option, I think.
Yes.
I mean, right? I mean, yeah. If you just look at that and you say to yourself, wow, this is pretty great, because if he flames out, if he's terrible, okay, you know what? You just swallow your heart and you just say, all right, we'll get the kids some minutes. We'll figure that out. Get, you know, if he's good, you now have the decision of re-signing him after next year, trading him, signing someone else to take that salary slot. I like it. I think it was a smart move that they cleared the decks a little and brought this in.
Yeah, and nobody has to love it.
Right.
There's nothing. It's not like, oh, we got Jabari Parker.
Championship.
Right.
Yeah,
you're not getting a star. You're getting a guy who was, in relative terms, a failure for what he was supposed to be in Milwaukee. I totally get that. When he played, there was flashes of goodness from Jabari Parker, but for the most part, and let's not forget about the torn ACLs, which are obviously a huge thing. He's had two of them that really hindered what he was supposed to do and supposed to accomplish while he was Milwaukee. So you're certainly not getting anything close to a finished product. But again, with that kind of a deal, with it being a flyer on a guy, and then the fact, too, and we talked about this a little bit in transition, part of it, nobody knows what the actual plans are for Jabari Parker. It could be just what I said, a tryout for a guy for a year. But you also have to remember that because the Bulls have struggled to land the big fish free agents because of the fact that right now the Bulls are building with the draft, and someday, maybe next year, they'll be building with trades. That's another huge part of this, that if the Bulls, you know, because the history is for a long time now that they haven't been able to land a big free agent, that Jabari Parker could act as ammunition as part of a trade with that kind of a deal. Maybe they pick up the option and make the trade or whatever. This could all be stuff that fits in nicely with some sort of package deal down the road, or Jabari Parker is really good with the Bulls.
Right, right. And I don't know, did you, I grew up in Boston, I'm a Celtics fan. Did you happen to watch that Bucks-Celtics series at all? Because the weird thing with him was the usage. Like, you know, regular season, end of the season, he was building up his minutes, he was playing some 38-minute games and stuff, and you thought, wow, okay, maybe he's going to be a real asset in the playoffs. You know, he struggled badly in game one, did not play well in game two, I think only had like 8 or 10 minutes of play time. And people are going, well, what's going on? I think there's a recency bias against him a little bit because that series was such a mess. He had like one decent game, shot poorly for the other five games. You know, so let's not forget, down the stretch, he was pretty darn good, and they mixed it up, and he just didn't find his rhythm.
Yeah, last season, Jabari Parker, 31 games, had only three starts, averaged 13 points per game, 38% from three. So, and overall, in 4 years, just going through the again, disappointing career so far of Jabari Parker. In 4 years, averaged 15 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, a 49% shooter. In 2016-17, he averaged 20 points a game. So that was sort of the gives you a little bit of hope sort of season that year. And the fact that we know that this guy is capable of being a scorer and a good all-around player. 312-644-6767, along with Eric at home. I'm Mark Grody. This hour on The Score is being brought to you by Grandview Homes. Grandview will buy your home today. Go to grandviewhomes.com. And let's go to the phones. 312-644-6767 is the number. A lot of people want to jump in on this. Let's go to Joe in Indy. Hi, Joe. You're on The Score.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just wanted to make two questions, one about the Bulls, one about the Bears. I do like the Jabari Parker contract signing for the same reasons that you just said, flyer. You know, if it works out great, if it doesn't, you know, best of luck to you in your career. But I'm a big optimistic type of a guy. With a healthy Jabari Parker, if he can give you 25 to 30 minutes, is the Bulls a playoff team? And if so, how far up the East, with LeBron James being gone, going West, how far up the East do you think they can go? And then to the Bears, I want to talk more about the receiving core. I've seen tweets about Anthony Miller versus Kevin White, but I'm more curious about Javon Wims and if he's going to compete with Josh Bellamy to get up higher on the depth chart, because I'm very impressed by Javon Wims. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. 312-644-6767 is the number. We'll start with, why don't we start with the Bears right there?
Sure.
You know, it's interesting. Josh Bellamy was actually, and you didn't necessarily want this, but Josh Bellamy was the number two wide receiver on the Bears last year in terms of yardage. I mean, that's just sort of symbolic of the way the season went last year. I don't know what kind of a pro Javon Wims, the seventh rounder out of Georgia. How do you scout him and scout his chances of making this team and making an impact on this team?
Obviously, worst case scenario, you know, he's practice squad and he's there in case you have an injury, you have something like that. I would think him making it probably coincides with Kevin White not being in the picture or something. Just another body that he's a similar size guy, not the freakish athlete that White would be if he's healthy. But Javon Wims, I'll say this, for a run heavy team with a freshman quarterback last year, made some plays and some eye-opening ones. He is a good downfield blocker. He's got that big physical frame. I kind of thought he'd be more of a fourth or fifth round pick. I was a little surprised he went that late. I think value-wise, they did a fit. That was, you know, potentially a great pick. But again, it's really hard to know exactly how all those other receiver, you know, spots fill up a little bit.
Yeah, he's got Wims has got great size, but he also made a point of saying this. I don't remember the exact question that was asked, but it was almost like he was ready for it. He does not want to just be thought of as a go up and get it guy, because that's the way it is when you see a tall receiver. Right. Now we all said, just because, and maybe Bears fans specifically, were that's get said because of Alshon Jeffrey, who was a great go up and get. He kind of was a go up and get it guy at a lot of times. But now if you're a tall guy, you're go up and get it. And Javon Wims is like, no, don't typecast me like that.
The thing is, I think this nickname, if I remember correctly, was Juice. So, I mean, it wasn't just about the go up and get it. I mean, he had a little burst, you know, for a bigger guy. And I don't know what the rookie expectations are for him, but I think if he finds a way to stick here, I wouldn't be shocked if you were surprised by him in a couple of years.
Yeah, there's so many other guys like ahead of him on the depth chart that are supposed to thrive or have, like, we talk about, we know that Allen Robinson kind of has to based on what they signed him
barring
to do.
Barring
injury and that left knee. But then maybe ahead of him, too, on the hope list is Anthony Miller.
Sure.
Who is a guy who is considered a terrific route runner and a guy who, again, has been extremely impressive at every level he has been in football in terms of overcoming stuff and making people notice him.
Uh-huh. And I talked to Miller's receivers coach, the guy who essentially recruited him at Memphis, and he's now at Virginia Tech, and he said, I still show Anthony Miller practice tape, how to run a route, how to attack defensive backs to my Virginia Tech receivers. He's like, you know, they don't really know who the guy is. They will soon. But, yeah, there's a maniacal approach to the game that he brings. He's going to be, I'm telling you, Bears fans are going to love this guy. Yeah. And I'm not a Bears fan. I'm not a homer. I promise you. I am just giving you the good news first so that, you know, you grow to love me too. So.
Yeah. It's growing. You know, we're 13 minutes into the show.
I know.
And you know what? I just clicked like. I like you.
Yeah.
Things are going well.
Like it.
Yeah. I just totally clicked it. What was the Bulls question?
Anybody? The Bulls question was competing in the East, right? Are they a playoff team?
Oh, no, they're not a playoff team.
Really? In this watered down East,
think about how bad they were that last year. What did they do this year that made them so much better? I mean, you can't count
two first rounders, right?
Yeah. Well, Wendell Carter Jr. and the guy that we're having on, actually, Ricky O'Donnell from SBN Nation, another guy that I'd click like for. I did the TV show with NBCSportsChicago.com with him last night, and he thinks that Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be an absolute stud.
Wow.
Like, star. I don't know how fast he'll be that. I mean, if he is that next year, then the Bulls will be in the playoffs. But I don't know what they've done so far this season that says, oh, absolutely, they're a playoff team. Because I'm giving time to Wendell Carter Jr. to develop into. But he said, Ricky says, that he's going to be better than Lauri Markkanen. And if that's the case, then
change your expectations.
You got a nice little change in expectations.
Yeah.
And he's coming up, by the way. Ricky O'Donnell will be on with us at 4 o'clock today. Eric and I are here until 5 o'clock, taking your calls right now, 312-644-6767. We've got Ben Albright talking NFL coming up in a few minutes. But right now, let's go to Brian in Lincoln Park. Brian, you are on The Score. What's going on, Bri?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
So my question is about Jabari Parker. Not so much the signing. I think it's a great signing. It makes a lot of sense. But my question is, so best case scenario, he turns out he's just not going to be LeBron or Steph. Those guys just don't come around like this.
Right.
So then you have basically Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen. Are they going to be able to bring in that major free agent? Because you win championships two ways. Either you've got the Greg Popovich and the Brad Stevens coach, or you've got the LeBron James and Steph Curry. So is Fred Hoiberg that coach? I think definitely not. Is Jabari Parker that player? I also think not. So kind of not so much the signing for this year, but where does this signing take us?
Yeah, no, this signing, like I said, the signing of Jabari Parker is a flyer on a young player, 23 years old, who was great in high school, who was great in college, was great enough to be the number two overall pick in 2014 with Milwaukee. Hadn't worked out that way because of injuries, because of inconsistent play. So now the Bulls have signed the guy to, in essence, a one-year deal with an option worth $40 million. So it's a tryout for him this year. In terms of landing a free agent, let's just say no, because the Bulls, I mean, they probably will get somebody from that class next year, but are they going to land the big fish, the game changer? Just for the sake of what's happened historically and what we know about the current regime in terms of having success with that, and it hasn't been all failure. I mean, for the most part, there's been a lot of good with this regime in terms of what the Bulls have done, except for winning a title. But for whatever reason, the Bulls have not been able to land that big fish, to lure that big fish. So again, Jabari Parker could be part of a trade scenario, a package like that, because that may be the way the Bulls have to go in terms of building their team going forward.
You make a good point here, too, because if they feel like, and you never know how these things are going to go. The Lakers weren't even sure about LeBron until 20 minutes before he called. You know what I mean? Like, until he called, they didn't really know that they were going to get him. So NBA free agency does feel like that super crapshoot. If they have any doubts, or if there's questions about Hoiberg or questions about the rest of the roster, they seriously have to be prepared to do what you just said, which is to, even if he's playing well, use him as that trade chip. And that's the way you go get somebody of that free agent caliber status, just a different route. And you have to give up something a little different. So that, if that's how you skin the cat, that's how you do it.
Yeah. And if Wendell Carter Jr. is as good as some people who watch the NBA super closely think he's going to be, that's a game changer in terms of your, the entire look of your team. If you have two guys who, you know, everybody thinks that Lauri Markkanen is trending star. And if people think that Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be better than him, so he's trending star. So if you get these two guys to possibly to surprise next year, then that's a game changer in terms of the pressure that you have to go get guys in free agency. And it actually will probably help to lure free agents and help the Bulls to be taken a little bit more seriously. Let's go to Kyle in Rockford. Hi, Kyle, you're on the Score.
Hey, good afternoon. Great show. I got two questions. One's mainly about the Bulls, but the other one's about maybe the Cubs. First one I'll ask about the Bulls. What would it take for the Bulls to maybe possibly landing Carmelo Anthony? And then my second question about the Cubs, do you think they have a realistic shot of landing Curtis Granderson? And do you think they could trade Anthony Rizzo?
Okay, Kyle.
You threw me a curveball there at the end. I wasn't prepared.
Yeah, now I'm not even sure if that was real. Is it possible to get Granderson? Let's see. Let's just answer these questions. Yes. Granderson, sure, it's possible.
Yeah.
Is it possible to trade Anthony Rizzo? Absolutely not.
No.
What would it take to get Carmelo Anthony? I don't care.
I haven't followed this Carmelo trade scenario story all that closely, although I've heard the Rockets are sort of like expected to be the big T4. Tell me what the allure of this guy is. I loved
point,
him coming out,
know.
And I
yeah.
cannot stand him now.
Well, think about how it worked out when the Bulls signed Dwayne Wade. And Dwayne Wade is known as kind of an NBA good guy.
Right.
And it didn't work out that way with the Bulls in terms of meshing with those young guys. He and Jimmy Butler just sort of being the evil parents of that group. Can you imagine Carmelo Anthony, who comes across at least as being much lesser in that capacity? I mean, he wouldn't want to be here. So that's like a non-starter for me. Unless there's some sort of complicated NBA thing where if they got him, it's some salary cap give up or part of a trade package or some three-way deal where he stops in and like where he doesn't play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that kind of situation.
But I don't know, man. I mean, other than the shooting, it just doesn't make sense because then you're still overlapping the same positions you've added to. Parker, Hutchinson, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't get the benefit there.
I think that guy trolled us into talking about Carmelo Anthony a lot more than we should have.
He slow played us, man. You know, I liked it, though. You know, he lured us in and then...
Slow play.
Yeah.
I like the way you talk. That is Eric at home. I'm Mark Carodi. Again, we're here until 5 o'clock. 312-644-6767. Hang in there, Bulls College. We'll talk more Bulls coming up in just a little bit. But right around the corner, we're going to talk NFL with Ben Albright on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back into Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mark Grody, Eric Edholm with you till 5 o'clock, talking all sorts of stuff. The news of the day, Jabari Parker, two-year, $40 million deal with the Bulls. We'll get back into that. We'll talk some baseball, Cubs and White Sox with Bruce Levine. We'll talk NBA as well with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. I got some fun peripheral stuff from 1993. They're celebrating the 1993 White Sox on the South Side all weekend, a beloved White Sox team. But there was other blockbuster things that were going on in the Chicago sports scene and some things on the inside with the White Sox as well that we'll get into a little bit later on. And your calls will be coming too at 312-644-6767. With Eric here covering the NFL, I'll be covering the NFL this year. And now we get to talk to Ben Albright. He is a host on AM 1340 and FM 104.7 in Denver. He specializes in the NFL draft, but he knows the NFL inside and out. And Ben, are you ready to go full blast NFL? The season is upon us.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
It is a good time of year. It's I know you're obviously out in the Denver region. We're here in Chicago. And so I guess I'd like to ask your kind of 30,000 foot view on where the Bears have done this offseason. I mean, there's a lot of excitement locally, and maybe people have gone a little too deep on this, but what are your impressions of Matt Nagy, Mitch Trubisky year two, that offense specifically? What are you seeing from afar?
Well, we had the opportunity to see Matt Nagy's offense up close and personal, last year. There's definite reason to be excited. He's a very creative play caller, likes to expand his horizons. Isn't a guy who's mired in tradition. He's willing to try things. And I think that's going to be a welcome departure from the last staff that was there. In the interest of full disclosure, Dal Logans and I were together at Arkansas. So my opinion of him being very low should tell you something. But I think that what they're doing is bringing in the correct pieces. You're bringing in a Taylor Gabriel. You need that speed, a guy who can take the top off, similar to what they had over there in Kansas City with Tyreek Hill. So I think that there's reason for excitement. I think a lot of it hinges on the development of Mitch Trubisky.
Let's keep let's go to your draft eyes too, and stay on that Bears offense, and specifically the guard/center. Second round pick out of Iowa, James Daniels. Your thoughts on him coming out of college, out of Iowa, and where you think he fits in with the Bears this year in terms of, as in, will he start game one for the Bears this year?
Well, I don't know if he'll start game one, but if you know anything about guys coming out of Kirk Ferentz's Iowa offensive line, they tend to be well coached. They tend to understand the position. They tend to do pretty well in the NFL, specifically on the interior, which is where he'll play. I think he can be a good player. I don't know that he starts day one. I think it just kind of depends on how Nagy and that coaching staff like the guys that are already there and how they take to the system. I'll tell you, Matt Nagy likes guys that are a little more agile than your generic offensive lineman. He's not really a guy that likes the road graders. He's a guy that likes guys that they can get out of space for some of these creative screen type plays that they like to do. So the molds for maybe offensive linemen that he likes are similar to a zone blocker, but I think that overall he just likes him a little more nimble.
The other draft guy that I think is received, I mean, Roquan Smith, number 8 overall pick, should receive a lot of attention paid to him this year. But Anthony Miller is part of this revamped wide receiver group here too. And Mark and I were talking before the show. I mean, there is legitimate excitement about him. There should be, but oh, by the way, you mentioned Gabriel. And there's Allen Robinson, other people involved in this receiver group. Can Anthony Miller make that year one impact in your mind based on what you've seen from his Memphis tape and kind of projecting in Nagy's scheme?
Well, again, I don't know if he's going to be year one guy. Wide receivers have one of the toughest adjustments, to make an immediate impact in the NFL outside of maybe defensive tackles. For different reasons, but Anthony Miller was a guy they wanted here in Denver. They were very excited about trying to get him here in Denver, and ultimately, didn't fall to the area that they thought where they could get him. He's He was a guy that Paxton Lynch was lobbying hard for out here as well. So I think that he can make an impact down the line. I think that you see a heavy investment in the wide receiver position because of, you know, previous seasons, injuries, talent, things like that. But also Nagy tends to go with, you know, three and four receiver sets really often. So, you know, I think you're going to see him get out there early on season one. I don't know about how big an impact he'll make.
You know, one of the things that, you know, living in our own little Bears bubble here, you know, there is definitely reason to be optimistic for the Bears. I mean, I don't know what's realistic at this point, but when you look at the rest of the division, you still have what I'd call a finished product, obviously, in Minnesota. You had a 9-7 Detroit team last year and a Green Bay team this year that will have Aaron Rodgers back. Where do the Bears fit in with the division this year? Are they better than anybody on paper right now?
They might be better than the Lions on paper. I expect that Lions team to regress. I think they took advantage of the fact that Rodgers was out last year. You know, I like the Lions. I like Matt Stafford. But I just don't know where they fit. And this is a tough division. You already mentioned that you've got a Minnesota team that, you know, we need to see how Kirk Cousins fits in there. But, you know, and I'm not sure Minnesota upgraded moving him in there. Certainly not upgraded for the dollar amount spent. But, you know, I'm not sure they got better than Case Keenum with him in there. And then Aaron Rodgers, you know, any team he's playing with always has a chance to win. So, it's going to be tough. I think Chicago is on an upward trajectory. And if you look at this as a 3-year plan, you know, this year your guys are going to be competitive and lose small. In year two, you're going to be, you know, competitive and win small. And then by year three, hopefully you're winning big. If you keep that perspective in mind, I think you're not setting yourself for overblown expectation.
Stay on that Keenum thought a little bit, because you are in Denver. Broncos signed him. They look to sort of see what the Cousins money was. Wasn't going to play out well there. Okay. He's a pretty good plan B. He started, 13 games last year, came in relief in the game here in Chicago and kind of bailed him out. Played, like you said, really well until about the last six quarters of the season, I should say. I mean, is it possible that this Cousins thing flops so badly or just doesn't come close to the money that the Vikings pay? Because 13-win team with a tight end, two receivers, I mean, it's Dalvin Cook. I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah, especially with that defense. It could very well blow up in their face. Kirk is a guy that, you know, had some issues in the locker room there in Washington, rubbed some of the guys there the wrong way with the way that things were handled. Whether or not that's a byproduct of, you know, his battle with ownership or his actual personality, you know, that remains to be seen. I don't think he's worth $10 million more per year than Case Keenum.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he provides $10 million more per year what he does than Case Keenum. He's going to turn the ball over more than Case. Now, your offense stays a little more three-dimensional because he can push the ball down the field a little better than Case can. But, you know, I don't know that they got better adding him. I know they got more extensive. I don't know if they got better.
Yeah, and Trevor Siemian, now the backup in Minnesota. After they had all those guys that were free. Teddy Bridgewater gone now to the Jets. You mentioned Case Keenum. While we're on Denver, how surprised was John Elway to have Bradley Chubb fall on his lap? And, I mean, that looks like a pretty mighty draft for the Broncos in terms of getting that guy.
Well, it was a stunner. They already had a trade lined up with Buffalo to get those two first-round picks out of Buffalo so Buffalo could move up and get Josh Allen, you know, there at five. The trade was already agreed to, conditioned on the fact that Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, or Bradley Chubb was not available. Obviously, Chubb fell into their lap, and so they ended up nixing the trade and taking him.
So the Bears and Broncos have joint practices this year. I don't know if you'll be there or not. Doesn't matter. But the fact is, I mean, that'll be an interesting week for the Bears and also this Broncos team that seems to be in the same place. There's hope. There's excitement that they can bounce back. But we've got to see it until we believe it. Tough division as well. I mean, how much do you think that week of practice is going to be, you know, sort of telling for a coach maybe on the hot seat in Denver and then also one in his first year in Chicago, Matt Nagy?
You know, I think you can tell a little bit about both from it. you know, it'll give an opportunity. Obviously, the Denver's already seen kind of the Matt Nagy offense, and it'll give an opportunity for, you know, for some of these guys conceptually to see the same things over with new personnel attempting it. You know, from the Chicago side of the house, you know, it'd be good to see Mitch Trubisky kind of get that trial by fire against a tough defense. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think the Broncos' defense has fallen off, and I don't think that's really the case. I think that just Trevor Siemian put them in so many terrible positions last year with turnovers that the defensive numbers looked worse than they were, and the defense had checked out by the time they got around to playing Philadelphia.
Any surprise teams churning right now in terms of predictions? I mean, aside from the Bears, because we talked a lot about them, but there's always those teams or those teams that you aren't thinking of that either shoot up or shoot down. Any idea for this year, Ben?
Well, you know, I having a conversation this morning, I thought my Chargers Super Bowl pick was pretty bold, but I guess there's a lot of people kind of on that bandwagon, even with the Hunter Henry injury. I think San Francisco is going to win the division over there. I know everybody's on the LA Rams, you know, bandwagon. That Niners team was very, very good last year, even in an early losing spate. They were very competitive in all those football games, and now it started to gel at the end of the season. Then they added Garoppolo, and it got even better. I fully expect the Niners to be somewhere between a 10 to 12 win team and win that division.
Yeah, Ben, I have to admit, you made me a little angry the other day. I have this like Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, and I punch in all these numbers and try to sort of compute and figure out who the surprise teams. Chargers, I think, like you said, a lot of people were kind of on them. Correct me if I'm wrong, though. You kind of teased a Chargers-Falcons Super Bowl. Is that right?
That is correct. That
okay.
is my pick for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's I had like not even an hour before that I'd come up, and I'm like, man, the Falcons are way high in my little, you know, laboratory of numbers, and the Chargers are up there too. And so you kind of stole my thunder a little bit. I haven't had a chance to tell you how angry I am.
we may use some of those same numbers when
All
we're
right.
doing that tabulating.
Perfect. I'll share them with you.
I kind of think there's another Los Angeles team called the Rams with Ndamukong Suh on that team to go along with Aaron Donald and Brandon Cooks they had on the offensive side of the ball. Hey, man, Los Angeles football is back, baby.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. The Aaron Donald situation, for those who may not be aware, I mean, his contract situation, Ben, I don't know if you have anything on that, but I mean, if they don't make him happy, this Rams thing could sort of fall apart a little bit at the seams.
Yes, and there's a strong possibility he may not be back in L.A.
Wow.
There's, you know, some of the things that they've been doing, they don't feel like allocating the amount of money that it would take to allocate to him is worth it. They feel like they can get a certain amount of production out of that position and out of the other members of the front seven by distributing the money differently. So there's a strong possibility that he may not be back in Los Angeles.
Wow. That's a good little teaser.
All right,
there,
I may rethink my little LA Rams pick right there.
That's right. Best three tech in the game. Yeah, well, so you're suggesting that a trade could be a possibility. There's at least the option of possibly doing that.
Correct. And there are several teams that would be lining up, obviously, for that. Let me throw a shocker at you here real quick, because they've been kind of sniffing around it. The Cleveland Browns think they've got the money and the ability to get in there and get him and add him to that incredible rotation they would have on the defensive line there.
Wow.
So they would be one of the teams in the mix.
Yeah. And if you're the Browns, why don't you just go for that? I mean,
yeah. You know, that's
put it next to Myles Garrett.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, and with Denzel
Ogba,
Ward, and you're back there,
yep.
And you know, a quarterback. You know, speaking of the Browns and quarterbacks, it made me think of Baker Mayfield and all the rookie quarterbacks, Sam Darnold and Josh Allen and Josh Rosen and Lamar Jackson. Which one of those guys or any of them do you think is ahead of the curve in terms of either will be starting, you know, close to relatively or quickly, or will be a starter before the season is over? Do you have any insider information on that?
Well, the Jets owner wants Darnold, so I'll tell you that. Mm. As far as the rest of them goes, you know, all of them will probably be starting before the end of the season. Mayfield may not, given that he's got Tyrod there, and Tyrod's a pretty serviceable quarterback. But, you know, Josh Allen could probably be starting pretty quickly. A.J. McCarron's looked bad. He may not even make that roster.
Yep.
You know, Nate Peterman may be the game one starter there.
Wow.
And then you've got, you know, the Ravens over there. Flacco's kind of reaching the end of his rope. And I thought it was interesting. The Ravens Titans in the draft went real heavy, you know, getting the tight ends. They want to go heavy on offense, which, you know, in turn forces a defense to kind of go heavy, pushes you back to base and out of nickel, makes you a little bit slower. Then you bring Lamar Jackson and his speed in and get him a chance to get to the edge and use that bootleg ability. I like what the Ravens are trying to do, at least on paper in that offense. I don't know that he's going to be starting this year, though.
I think the Arizona thing is interesting, too, because you have Sam Bradford, I think, on paper is the starter this year for Arizona. But Josh Rosen, who, you know, some people thought was the best prospect in that quarterback draft, but he's got the whole attitude thing going. He's one of the more intriguing guys because I think he could be the best of the bunch if he stops and listens.
Right. If he can capture that locker room and be a leader in there and get everybody behind him, he definitely could. He's got the tools, and of course we all saw the tape. He can throw the football. I question several things about that Arizona football team. I mean, anytime you have the opportunity to pay Sam Bradford $20 million to play probably two games for you and drag the ghost of Mike Glennon back out of the
we know that.
You kind of have to do it, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, that's a you're touching the third rail here in Chicago. That's this is well worn turf over here. But yeah, that's don't they actually have. Is it Mike Glennon their third quarterback, right? So they've
Mike
got
sure is. Number two, yes.
Wow, we're getting a lot of overlap here. Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Glennon lives. Ben, thank you very much for your time and for your information. I'm sure that we will be checking in with you throughout the NFL season, and happy NFL season to you.
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
See you, buddy.
That is again right. Ben Albright, his Twitter handle at AlbrightNFL. He's a host on AM 1340 and FM 104.7 in Denver. A lot on the NFL draft, but obviously, as you could hear, he knows what he's talking about with the NFL. And, man, if Aaron Donald becomes available to the world, every single NFL team, I mean, we'll be talking about it here in our Bears bubble,
yep,
but every team's going to go for that guy.
They have to. They have to at least kick the tires, see what the offer is, and if you're the Rams, it makes a ton of sense to play one team against the other and get as much as you can. If you're not planning on re-signing him and you feel like you got to allocate that money elsewhere, that's the only route you can really go.
312-644-6767 is the number of Pro Football Weekly. It is Eric Edholm. I am Mark Grody of The Score. Both of us will be in Bourbonnais covering the Bears. Eric covers the NFL at large as well. And, of course, the Bears is what we definitely zero in on around here. And here's the problem I've had with the Bears so far this year, Eric, in terms of questions and potential answers. I mean, I know that it does look good. I mean, this is the first year that I feel like there is at least an entertainment value going into camp in terms of actual promise and maybe some guys, some budding talent actually existing basically based on what they did on the offense. There's definitely great things happening on the defense as well. But this is the problem, is I can't get a read on how to predict this team this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's one of the most difficult years in a lot, because you kind of had an idea of what was going to happen to the Bears last year.
Oh,
maybe not 5-11, maybe not Mike Glennon that bad, but mediocre to below mediocre was easy to pick last year for the Chicago Bears. This year, I just can't. I can't figure out, or I can't name a record. I don't know if they're going to be good. I don't know if they go through some massive growing pains, and a lot of that is based on the fact that we still have no idea about Mitchell Trubisky.
Yep. And I don't think he was bad last year, but he wasn't good. And he wasn't terrible. He just was not, you know, there were moments where you thought, okay, I can see what's going on here. And maybe the scheme really did hold him back. You know, he wasn't as bad as Jared Goff was in 2016. And look what Goff did last year. If you see any kind of improvement on that scale, they're going to be just fine. You know, he'll be great. The team will be great. You know, all that stuff. So I'm with you. That you look at the schedule too. Green Bay, we don't really know how good the Seahawks are. Cardinals, who's starting a quarterback? You know,
well, according to Ben, it won't be Sam Bradford because that will have been two games already.
Too far.
The Bears play them in week three,
right.
So the Bears could be seeing Josh Rosen in week three. Put it on your calendar for that 3:15 game in Arizona in week three.
Yeah, lock it in. I don't know what to say. I will expect an improvement. I think they can be 500 or maybe a 9-7.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what I'm feeling.
And I do think, it's, you get a real look at Mitchell Trubisky this year, because Nobody expected that Mitchell Trubisky was going to be starting in week five last week on a Monday Night Football game, no less, against the Minnesota Vikings. Like, I think that I expected that Mitchell Trubisky would start like late in the season, kind of in the blow-off part of the season when the Bears were out of it, and that Mike Glennon would have done or will have done at that point a decent job. I mean, that's what I thought, but he was abruptly put in that week five game. And, you know, we talk about Dal Loggins, you know, Ben Albright, great friends with Dal Loggins, but doesn't have anything nice to say about
it. Stinks. Yeah, right.
Anything nice to say about Dal Loggins.
Can't imagine what he says about us.
Yeah, he's like these two idiots from Chicago. I don't know what they were talking about. But, you know, it's like last year, Mitchell Trubisky had the Monday Nighter, and then he had some games that were just so low volume, or where he didn't really have an opportunity to throw, like a 4-for-7 game against Carolina, 8-for-16 against Baltimore, a really good game against Cincinnati last year. But it's not like they gave him an opportunity in a lot of circumstances to show what he's all about, which just makes it even more mysterious heading into this season.
Off the top of my head, I think he averaged about 27 pass attempts a game, and that went up as the season went on. Like you said, that Carolina game. You know, more sacks than completions, maybe. I mean, it was close. Yeah. So obviously room for improvement, but there's no doubt they put a leash on him and they only let him do so much. I was worried in training camp when I watched Glennon, and anything past 15 yards looked ugly. And I thought, this is only going to be a short to intermediate passing game. There was no deep threat at receiver, and he couldn't throw it to him if there was. So,
yeah. And that's one of the things that, great things that Matt Nagy says, if you are a Bears fan, that he has said, we are going to throw the ball downfield. And I think he used the terminology, we're not going to let you think you could just get away with making that we're just going to make the intermediate 10 to 15 yard passes.
Mm-hmm.
So the hope is that they have the capacity this year with Allen Robinson at the throw downfield, maybe a healthy Kevin White, possibly a developing Anthony Miller. And then one of the most intriguing prospects, I think, offensively for the Bears, a guy who I can't wait to see how they use him, is Trey Burton, the tight end. You can call him a tight end, but he's a U, which means he basically lines up anywhere. And it's part of the reason why I don't think he was even drafted
out of Florida,
right? Yep. Because they didn't know what position he was going to play. As it turns out, he plays all the positions.
Yeah.
Do you think that they'll be able to make that real in terms of, because it sounds great. I mean, it sounds great. You got a U tight end who could line up anywhere and make all the plays. Can he do that?
Yeah, his workload will increase a lot. So obviously you worry about maybe stamina at the end of the season. How effective a blocker is he going to be? But you think about him as an inline tight end, as somebody who could split out, who can motion into or out of the backfield. Everyone watching the Super Bowl remembers Philly Special, him throwing the touchdown pass. He was a college quarterback at Florida for a year or two before they put him at that H-back spot. So he played, I hate to use the guy's name, but Aaron Hernandez role in Florida. Ooh. You know what I mean? Like, but
very talented player, Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, very good prospect. off-field trouble. And then he was the backup to one of the three or four best tight ends in the game in Zach Ertz. So it's a projection, but he's good.
Yeah, I mean, I think he started like 5 games in 4 years with the Eagles. He did have, considering the competition he had to deal with, as you mentioned, the two talented tight ends, several talented tight ends on that Philadelphia roster. He did have 5 touchdown catches, and that's pretty good considering all that. So you've got a little bit of red zone threat right there with him and Allen Robinson and Adam Shaheen. How about that name?
He is. I'm just finished writing my 18 most important Bears of the season. Like, if they're going to be good this year, 2018, let's play on that number. Right.
I just click like again, by the way. Your most important
double
Bears.
Double like?
Go.
Wow.
Yeah,
this is getting like a little steamy. The
little heart button for that one, man. Right. That's awesome.
And I couldn't leave him off my list. I know that people have kind of moved on a little, okay, he is what he is, but he was playing D3 ball as a kind of a large wide receiver. They split him out at Ashland College, right? Playing these little 5'8 defensive backs. And okay, the game changed quite a bit. And yet he did have a couple of moments where you thought red zone threat, maybe a blocker down the road. I still think he's going to have a role in it. And I think Taylor Gabriel's going to be huge for them.
Yeah, yeah, I left his
just
name
that
out.
Threat of going deep, that's huge.
Right, and he seems like a guy, too, who's totally and completely comfortable with his role as being a guy who throws things off when he goes into the game in terms of matchup. Like, maybe his threat leaves somebody else open. And I'm sure he'd love to catch 100 balls, but that's probably not real. I mean, he caught actually a decent number of catches last year for Atlanta, just didn't run up a lot of yards. But with that kind of speed and the fact that he just says, when asked what his role is on the team, he just says, I'm an athlete. I mean, I do whatever you need to do. It seems like he's very comfortable with that. And it's legit top of the line NFL speed.
Yeah. I mean, in 2016 with that Falcons team, I mean, he was kind of a revelation and he helped make the thing go. As Nagy said, we're going to run deep routes.
Yeah.
Just because we don't throw it to the guy doesn't mean it's not having an effect.
The threat.
It pulls that safety out. Yep, now Howard can run. Now Cohen can run. Now we can throw underneath. It's just if he can – he was the fastest guy in OTAs that I saw on the Bears field. I mean, I only went to two practices, but he was just out there
running. He's legit, yeah. And it's funny because you've got, you know – an abundance of super, like with Tariq Cohen, and these guys have a friendly little, like each of them says that they're the fastest guy on the team. I'm pretty sure it's Taylor Gabriel.
It could be, yeah.
But Tariq Cohen claims to be the fastest guy on the team, and I'm sure you get arguments from other guys as well.
I would watch that race.
Oh, that'd be really good. Yeah. And I'm sure that, like, knowing the bravado of both of those guys, a healthy bravado in a good way, they would probably do that for everybody. Maybe we could kind of coax that to happen in Bourbonnais.
Make a charity event out of it or something.
Isn't it funny how you put charity event before something and then you have to do it?
It's the pressure, right? Right. Oh, you're cool with leaving these kids you know, without some help here?
Right.
Oh, that's cool, man. Whatever.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to do this. It's for charity. Now you can't leave. Now you have to do it. It's going to go down.
We're good.
Yeah, we're rocking this thing. But it's the offensive pieces are interesting. The one thing that I wonder about, and in a good way, is how does Matt Nagy make it all work? What combinations of guys does he have out there at different times? It's the proverbial good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be some challenge to it because there's going to be stuff probably that won't work, certain combinations. I know that Tariq Cohen's going to get the full playbook this year, whereas last year he really didn't. I mean, I think he was a little bit limited, but there's going to be more for him. So it's a big job for Matt Nagy, but it seems like just getting to know him a little bit, he loves it. Like, he's rubbing his hands together. He's just like, this is the kind of stuff he stays up late thinking about in a good way.
Oh, yeah. And I had a great conversation with Chase Daniel, now appears to be Mitch's backup. And, you know, he's been in the league a decade. He was with Drew Brees in New Orleans. He was with Alex Smith in Kansas City. Knew Nagy there, too. Those three guys would trade ideas. And he said the best thing about Coach Nagy and scheme is there's no ego. Like, he wants Mark Helfrich's input. He wants Chase Daniel's input. He wants Mitch. You know, he wants to know, Mitch, what are you most comfortable with 2-minute drill? What are you most comfortable with first drive of the game? What do we come out with? So this is going to be a very interactive script. And so, yeah, that alone, I think, is going to be fun to watch.
Let's go through the offensive line a little bit because, like, people that's always a default, I think, with a lot of teams. And with the Bears, it's like a bullpen in baseball where people say, well, I'm not really sure about that offensive line for the Bears this year. But I think you have probably a solid center in Cody Whitehair.
Yep.
If Kyle Long is healthy, you know you have a really good right guard. The left guard situation is really interesting because you have potentially James Daniels, the rookie, playing there. But I feel like it's trending Eric Kush, probably. I mean, just from what I saw in the OTAs, that maybe right off the bat, it's Kush, who was gone with a hamstring injury last year, played 8 games for the Bears 2 years ago. I feel like, and maybe they're just waiting until the last second to really feature Daniels in practice, and they'd like him to be the starter, but I feel like maybe it's Kush to start, and when Daniels really knows what's going on, that he's in there as a starter.
He's still going to be 20 years old by the calendar in week one.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't turn, I think, until a couple days later. So we're talking about a really young guy. I know Kirk Ferentz a little bit. I know some guys in that Iowa program. They loved his year-to-year growth. Did he start out needing to fill out a little bit? Did he start out, you know, still kind of a little unsure of his assignments? Yeah, but they said he put in the time, he put in the work, he got better every single year, but also within the seasons too. So I would not be shocked if he doesn't win that job. It's somebody like like Cush, we forgot how big an injury that was last
year. Yeah.
You know, that was a sneaky loss.
Did he play at all last year?
He got hurt in camp. I was my first day down at camp last year was about a week in or 7 days, you know, 5 days in or whatever. And that was when he tore a pec or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So he was shelved from the very beginning. I think it was hamstring, wasn't it?
Or hamstring. You may be right. You're right.
Yeah. Yep. I think it was a hamstring for Cush. So I know that James Daniels will be a starter. I just wonder right away, but that's some good insight from Kurt Ferentz as well. As far as the tackles go, I mean, the guy that everybody likes to pick on, and I think is Charles Leno Jr. because he was a seventh round pick, and it was the Phil Emery regime. But this is a guy who has started 45 straight games.
Absolutely.
Hasn't missed a game since 2015. And seems like, maybe not by leaps and bounds, but every year gets a little bit better and is ranked relatively high, it seems like, in terms of the measurements and what he does, that maybe people want a bigger name there. But I feel comfortable with Charles Leno Jr. as a left tackle.
Well, ask yourself this. What if he got hurt? Like, who's, you know, then you're really playing chess about who moves where and stuff. I think they need him. I think he's a big part of what they do. He was on my top 18 guys, you know, and certainly is in, maybe left tackle is not quite the, you know, all important position everyone makes it out to be, but it's important. And I think he's going to fit well in this offense. I don't see a clear cut backup to him who would just step right in.
Right. I think Bradley Soule is their swing tackle.
He can play both. Yeah.
But again, he's not going to have that kind of force. And the other interesting...
The Seahawks couldn't use him. I mean, right? Like, yeah. Doesn't that tell you that there's still okay.
Right. And the other interesting guy too is Rashad Coward, who the Bears used as a defensive guy this year.
That's right.
Been turned over to offense. I don't know if he'd be a guy who's being converted. I mean, I don't think you could put him in. I don't even know what kind of an impact he would make. But you're right. There's a little bit of depth issues when it comes to the line.
Would you even entertain the idea, let's say Kyle Long's healthy, would you even think about putting him back at tackle again?
No.
No. I probably wouldn't either.
And I think that Kyle Long would probably be the first person to just be like when it first time around, he was like, yeah, whatever the team needs, I think he would be like, no, dude, no.
You know how that one ends.
Yeah. I am a Pro Bowl guard. Leave me here, please.
I mean, you got to love the fact that he tried.
He did. And he wasn't bad. And I think people have said that he had the demeanor was even better for guard. That little bit of nasty, that fight in a closet that was, you know, better fitting for a guy like him.
Yep.
I'm trying to think. Earl Watford. That's the other guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's depth as well. But I don't really know much about him in terms of what he might be able to do. So we're going to continue talking NFL throughout the afternoon. Eric Edholm, Pro Football Weekly. Mark Grody here of The Score and of the Bears Sidelines coming soon, and of Bourbonnais, where Ollie will be living. 312-644-6767, the number here on The Score. Coming up, though, top of the hour, 3 o'clock, we'll go to the South Side, bring in our Bruce Levine to talk baseball. We will talk about the Cubs and the Chicago White Sox. Coming up next on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.